Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. You see them on the streets. They sift through the trash to find cans, bottles, and metals. They push their shopping carts full of bags down the street. A surprising number of Americans make their living off of our vast rivers of trash. The grueling work of searching for trash and searching trash and recycling bins supplements many low-income earners, and for many, it's their only source of income. The new documentary, Dogtown Redemption, provides an intimate glimpse into the lives of recyclers in West Oakland who search to survive. Here is the film's trailer.
This is the neighborhood where the poor, the unemployed, this is where they end up. This is West Oakland.
Look at all these people. All these people are working very hard to get this. Very hard. No one here can get a job.
How you doing? How's business?
I am the redeemer. I redeem the money to the person who walks in.
I can't weigh your glass twice, though.
That's all right.
Okay, so we'll throw this ticket away.
I guess it's not that good a pay, but it beats nothing.
Where else but America can you get up, be dead broke, no education, no skills, get yourself a shopping cart, walk around the streets, and make $100?
Everyone who recycles is just not a criminal or a crook. People have had some hardships in life. Some people were born into poverty. Some people were born with a half a chance to really make it out here. Lord.
And that is the trailer for the new documentary, Dogtown Redemption, which premieres tonight at 5 o'clock at the Mill Valley Film Festival. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. And again, this documentary gives a voice to people who recycle in West Oakland, people who push their shopping carts full of bags down the street. You've probably seen them, pass by them. Maybe they go through your bin. And today we are joined by Amir Sultani. He is producer and co-director of Dogtown Redemption. Amir is an Iranian-American human rights activist. He's the author of Zahra's Paradise, a New York Times bestselling graphic novel on Iran's 2009 protests. And Dogtown Redemption is Amir's first documentary. He worked on it for 7 years. And Amir joins us in studio. Hi, Amir. Nice to see you.
Hello, Rose.
And congratulations on the film.
Thank you very much.
We're also joined by Landon Goodwin. He is one of the recyclers in the film Dogtown Redemption. Among the recyclers, Landon is known as a preacher. In the film, he says, "I'm in my valley of weeping," and he has an amazing story to tell on today's show. Thank you so much, Landon, for coming in.
Thank you.
Nice to have you.
Nice to see you.
So, Amir, 7 years on this documentary. Talk a little bit about how you first got interested in learning about the people who spend their days, and it is grueling work, who spend their days going through trash cans and bins. Sometimes they crawl inside of them to find aluminum and metals and glass to then recycle.
I moved to West Oakland, where my brother Abdi lived. And every morning, every night, especially at nights, you would hear the rattle of the shopping carts outside. And it was a spectral vision. There were all these people outside our house, hot weather, cold weather, out there. And they would go through the trash. Strange. Why are Americans going through trash? I mean, I'd come to America as an immigrant and had every blessing this country can afford, really, scholarships and everything. And it was just hard to see fellow Americans going through my trash or my brother's trash. And what was hard was oftentimes one person would go through the trash and then another person would come and then another. And then another. And you realize, my God, this is not just one isolated situation. This is deep and it's structural and it's systemic. And so finally, one day I walked down with one of the recyclers, met them. And the other hard thing was that nobody would ring the bell. There was no conversation. We were in, they were out. There's no communication. So I walked out and met a recycler, and we walked down to the recycling center together. And that was a vision. It was like a Fellini set. I mean, and what was amazing about it wasn't the intensity of the poverty, although obviously that hits you hard. It was the creativity. It was the energy. It was like a beehive. I mean, it was just and all the shopping carts from all over Berkeley and Oakland and so on, descending on the recycling center, almost like pilgrims going to their Mecca kind of thing. And so one night I had the good fortune of going outside the recycling center, and Landon was lying there. And it was around midnight, and I sat next to him just to understand. And Landon, kind of, his voice was just so captivating, and it exploded anything that you could think about poverty, everything, really. And that's pretty much when I knew that we're going to be making this film.
Wow, so Landon was the first person you met.
Landon was the first deep conversation I had.
Landon, what was it like when you met Amir?
Well, I was laying outside the recycling center with my recycle waiting for it to open. It was very early in the morning. I know it may have been 2 or 3 o'clock. I'm not very sure. And the gentleman came up and just asked if I can speak to you, you know. And I said, okay, why not, you know. I really didn't care, you know, let's talk. And we started having a conversation. I didn't know where this was going, but and then he said, listen, I want to film this. And I didn't care. Let's just film this. So we just started talking, and it just kind of took a life on from there.
Landon, we're going to talk about your story, but I feel like I know you so well because you play such a prominent role in Amir's film. What was it like for you when you saw the film for the first time?
The film, I think it really got to the crux of the matters. To give people a face, a face to the faceless, a voice to the voiceless, because they're just people too. You know, we're just people. And we kind of get lost in the economy of life, you know. And the film was touching because you find the same people in everybody's family. They may not be impoverished, but the same characters, the same personalities, the same wants, the same desires. So it was really touching for me because I got a chance to actually see some of the people that I knew from down there and didn't know much about them as well from their past. And so it was very intriguing. It's a very good, captivating film. And I'm just glad that he took it as far as he did. I hope that the film will bring awareness to people who are indigent, or whether it's by circumstances or by choice, because there's a lot of people there like pearls in the dust. They really want out.
Right.
But they just don't have the opportunity. So maybe this film will bring attention and draw some people to do something about it.
Right. And we're going to speak with another person in the film, Dogtown Redemption, Jason, a little later in the show. But he basically said, we all want jobs and we just want to be paid for our work. I mean, that was consistent throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite shocking that, you know, when you look at how hard somebody like Jason works for his money, how far he has to travel. I mean, I call Jason the Olympic Titan of recycling because he literally pushes the equivalent of the weight of a car on his recycling cart, and he balances it. So he's like a captain because the roads aren't straight, and, you know, it takes a lot of thinking.
Well, that was, for someone who doesn't know how this works, someone who sees you every day and maybe wonders about it, Jason says he's got a 15-mile day. Sometimes he's got hundreds of pounds of glass, hundreds of pounds of plastic, and about 50 pounds of cans.
Yeah, he's, you know, talk about industrious. He's very, very, and it's fascinating because it really is an economic universe. People think that the poor aren't part of the world economy, but when the price of recycling would drop during the recession, recyclers would have to carry twice the load for the same amount of money. So you literally see the impact of the economy on them in terms of weight. And in another way to think of them Some people think of them as scavengers and pests because they're going through the trash, they're going through the dirt. It's uncomfortable, it's violating privacy and so on. At another level, they're commodities traders who trade in plastics, bottles, and cans with the recycling center as the floor of a commodities house. I mean, pretty much. So there are lots of different ways of looking at it. But what I found powerful about the recyclers was, in fact, the dignity of work. Mm. There's, you know, the Oakland City Attorney recently issued a statement referring them to thieves, saying that the neighbors think of them as thieves. But in fact, you know, even some of the neighbors who were very harsh about the recyclers recognized how hard they were working. And there were points of contact and connection. So to sort of brand them as three thieves and addicts, I think blocks our ability to have conversations. I come from Iran where, you know, everyone is branded a heretic. Or, you know, I just feel that the reason for making the film is to deepen the conversation.
Landon, what would you say about that? Because we do see neighbors in Dogtown Redemption who talk about, this is a blight on our neighborhood, we want to get rid of this place. Other neighbors say there wouldn't be as many poor people in the area if it weren't for Alliance Metals, because some people who work really hard can make about $100 a day, and they're very strategic about where they go. They don't want other people to know where they're going. But how would you respond at a time when, you know, the Bay Area is booming, there's so much money here, but there are so many people living on the streets? And so, as Amir said, I mean, I've been reading comments from people living in my neighborhood who say they're tired of people on the streets without knowing their stories. What would you say?
Well, I say that a lot of times people don't understand exactly what people are going through who are doing this. And they call them thieves and they call them robbers. And you have to get to know a person to know what's really going on. And they just do the best that they can with what they have. A lot of the people who are complaining are people who just moved into the neighborhood. And I'll use the word gentrification that was taking place. And that's all it was. And so they moved in on a promise from a particular mayor who said that you just come on and buy this property because it's really good property. Let's buy this property, a good location. Let's come and let's do this, and we're going to move all these people out. Then he went on about his business and left them there. But a lot of the people who have been recycling, their family's been living in that for two and three generations in that neighborhood. So it's not exactly the new people's neighborhood. It's their neighborhood. Now, Alliance Metal has been in operation for maybe about 16 years or so. But well before that, there was drugs in that neighborhood. Well before that, there was prostitution in that neighborhood. Well before that, there was thieving going on in that neighborhood. And as a matter of fact, some of the people who are now recycling were former thieves and former robbers and former prostitutes and things. And now that they do that, they don't go out and break in your cars. And you'll find out that in that neighborhood, that there's less crime going on within maybe a 3 to 5 mile radius. There's less crime, but the further you go out, the more crime you find. So I don't agree with what they're saying. Now, I understand that in all spheres, in all worlds, there are going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the pretty. You know, you can find judges who are corrupt and judges who are non-corrupt, police officers who are corrupt and those who are not corrupt, politicians who are corrupt and those who are not corrupt, and no one complains about them. But they complain about the people that they think don't have any voice or don't really exist, don't really want them there. And but people are not necessarily impoverished. Impoverty is a state of mind. And sometimes this is all you leave them is with that impoverished state of mind. So I just don't agree necessarily that, you know, the people are terrible. There are some. You're going to always find people who want to do good, who want to do evil, who want to do right, who want to do wrong. But people have been there. Whether Alliance is there or not, they're going to still do what they do. They're going to still come through that neighborhood if that neighborhood has enough recycle. If that neighborhood be prosperous for their journey, they're going to come through. So, I mean, I think there needs to be dialogue and there needs to be some understanding Because just as you see the story of redemption, you'll find out that there's a many wonderful people with wonderful characters and wonderful personalities, that if you just give them the opportunity, they'll be more productive in society than some of the people that are there now.
And you're talking about yourself.
Well, okay.
Landon Goodwin is one of the recyclers in Dogtown Redemption. And I'll ask you about your story, Landon, because you talk about what happened when you turned 18. The crack cocaine epidemic hit your area and hit it like a ton of bricks. I don't want to give everything away in the film, but Amir reaches out to Landon's family and they reconnect. And now Landon is living in Vallejo, working in a recycling center, and as a pastor, he tends to the homeless. We're also joined by Amir Sultani. He's producer and co-director of the documentary Dogtown Redemption, which provides an intimate glimpse into the lives of recyclers in West Oakland who search to survive. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about the people that you see on the streets on a daily basis? They're going through trash. I've heard of, you know, people going through people's trash bins in San Francisco. Amir, you said that they went through yours in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And their shopping carts are overflowing with bags. They're most likely on their way to a recycling center because if they have enough, they can make between $30 and $100. So you've seen them on the streets. What are your thoughts about this? What questions do you have about these people and their stories? We will also talk about the role that government should play, why this is happening and actually getting worse in the Bay Area. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. For many, this is the only job that they're able to get. Jason in the film said, the best thing that can happen to us is to do work and get paid. A lot of people who live near these recycling centers say they want them to be shut down. If you live near a recycling center, what's your experience like? What's your opinion of this issue? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's talk a little bit about government because this is important. In the film, Oakland City Council member Nancy Nadel claimed that the metal that's turned into the recycling center is taken from private homes. And she basically said, you need to stop breaking the law. What did you learn about how government officials see people like Landon?
I think the most interesting comment came from, at the time, Mayor Dellums, Ron Dellums. Because government, the way it's organized, does not really listen to the poor. They don't have the levers of power. While Jay Anast was running Alliance Metals, he would organize the recyclers to go and speak in front of the recycling center. And this was a constant thing that was going on. So it was really a clash, if you will, on the one hand, between government and business. This was a recycling center that made, at its height, something like $10 million.
A year?
Yeah, in sales. So a third of that revenue came from shopping cart recycling. So that's around $3 million. That's about several hundred thousand dollars in money going to poor people.
I often wondered why Jay Anast, the owner of Alliance, didn't hire people. I mean, you had a close relationship with him. He saw you all on a daily basis.
That's a misconception. He did hire people.
Oh, he did?
And sometimes people worked out and sometimes they didn't.
Okay.
So he did hire people, sometimes as permanent full-time workers, some as part-time workers, some as just casual laborers, or various projects came up. Like he hired me one time just to adjust fences and put in some fence posts and paid me quite well to do it. And I was glad to do it. So that's just a misconception. Jay did what he can, but he's still a businessman, and he can only do what he can. He can't save everybody. So he just did what he could. So Elias did the best that he could. We have to understand that the people who are there have been there. You know, they have been there. So they weren't going anywhere. Where else are they going to go? You're going to just push them around from one place to another, to another, and to another. You know, but that's the only recycle center I ever know that came and embraced the people and tried to hire the people. Jay is still a businessman, so it's still about his business, and you don't expect him to ruin his business behind anyone. But nevertheless, he gave a lot of people opportunities.
Here's what was interesting. Government isn't, and this is something that I spoke with Susan Shelton and Mike Church, who work in the city of Oakland. They were deep thinkers about this. It's not that government is failing or empty. It's just that it has so many different parts to it. And it's organized in silos. So you have the health department in one section, you have police in another, housing in a third. And when what you have going on with the recycling center oftentimes requires all the different pieces of the government to be functioning together. That's not something that's always easily done. The other thing that I found, which I think is also really important, is not so much government, but it's also a breakdown of community. So in West Oakland, people used to know each other. There was a lot, there was a network, there was a connectivity there. There still is. But that's really eroded. And oddly enough, it's a little bit eroding because of technology. A lot of the commentary about the recycling center, but a lot of the conversation takes place at the level of email. Well, a lot of the recyclers are just, they have no access to technology. So the guy who would sort of helped me understand that the most was a Porsche mechanic, Bill Eason, who has an, you know, his mechanic shop next to there. And he would, you know, he was on the ground. He would meet the recyclers on the ground. If they annoyed him, he would tell them. But he had he was in conversation. And I feel that for all the nonsense about technology and networks and so on, and it, you know, social media, yeah, but really when you're not having conversations one-on-one in the neighborhood, which I'm not saying aren't happening, but they need to happen at a much deeper level. What I find very disappointing about the current situation with Alliance Metals is that pretty much the city attorney and the city of Oakland are shutting down Alliance Metals without offering a solution. So it's like, okay, who is listening to who's listening to the recyclers? What will happen to them? If somebody, let's say that somebody is using the money from the recycling center, not for drugs, but for methadone, what happens to them? You know, the recycling center is also a community center. It's where a lot of people who help each other informally. What will happen to that? So that's the sorrow. You know, I came to America as an Iranian, and in West Oakland, one of the things that, you know, the two symbols of the civil rights movement, one was the bench, the right to sit somewhere, and the other was the fountain, the right to, you know, to. So there was a bench and a fountain in the park next to the recycling center, and these are people who are walking miles to come over. Both the bench was destroyed and the water fountain was allowed to, you know, run dry. And I remember asking Nancy Nadell about it, and she said, you know, in some ways West Oakland's worse than Soweto, because there poor people do have access to water. Here they don't. And then it was also very interesting because, you know, one of the neighbors, a very nice guy, would give water to one of the recyclers. And then the question became, well, the water bill is going to go up. So some of the neighbors put locks on the fountain, on their water taps, to prevent that. So, you know, again, it wasn't, everybody is acting rationally in their own sphere.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the new documentary Dogtown Redemption, which provides an intimate glimpse into the lives of recyclers in West Oakland. It premieres tonight at 5 at the Mill Valley Film Festival. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Stay with us here on Local Public Radio, KALW. Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss media coverage of the deadly twin bombings in Turkey and the mounting anger against the Turkish government. On the domestic front, we'll talk about coverage of California Governor Jerry Brown signing hundreds of new bills. Three curb the overprescribing of psychiatric drugs for foster kids. We will speak with the investigative reporter at the San Jose Mercury News, who's been doing an ongoing investigation called Drugging Our Kids. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are speaking about a new documentary, Dogtown Redemption. It gives a voice to recyclers in West Oakland who search to survive. And the documentary premieres tonight at 5 at the Mill Valley Film Festival. You can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org. Amir Sultani is the producer and co-director of Dogtown Redemption. This is his first documentary, and he spent 7 years on this film. We're also joined by Landon Goodwin. He is one of the recyclers in Dogtown Redemption. I don't want to give too much away about Landon because the film really is amazing in the way that it follows his life. But I will say that Landon, who used to recycle in West Oakland, now works in a recycling center. He lives in Vallejo, and he is a pastor who works with the homeless. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. I'm sure that you see people who are pushing shopping carts down the street, going through trash bins, looking for glass and plastics and metals. What questions do you have? Do you ever have conversations with them? What are your thoughts about what they're doing? If you live near a recycling center, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we have a question from Stephen, who says, thank you for doing this film. Why can't we hire this workforce to sort recycling at waste management facilities and pay them a reliable and better wage than they can currently make? There was a documentary on the Brazilian-American artist Vic Muniz, who worked with recyclers at the largest dump in the world in Sao Paulo. And as a result of his work, there was an effort, response by local and state leaders. Could there be a similar effort here?
Definitely. I think that's a very smart idea. The challenge is that the recyclers are local, and trash is increasingly becoming a global business. One of the things that was very interesting as we were making the film was that the city of Oakland gave a $1 billion trash contract to waste management. So on the one hand, waste management, which over 10 years, so that's $100 million a year contract. And the recycling center, which is fairly small on the scale of things, is being shut down. So that's
West Alliance. Metals Alliance. Alliance Metals. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a push to basically their license is being revoked, and there's no solution as to where it may be moved. So, you know, you see the big waste management trucks moving around Oakland, and then you see the recyclers pushing the little shopping carts. That's a David and Goliath kind of situation. And unfortunately, we're not thinking creatively about how to integrate the poorest of our fellow Americans back into the workforce. And that's what's so beautiful to me about Alliance, is that you see people want to work. Mm.
There was a hearing in Oakland about Alliance, and Jason, who's in your film, testified, and he gave a very passionate speech about this issue, saying, if we don't have Alliance, we don't have much. We might go back to selling drugs. His girlfriend stopped working on the streets because she was getting some money from Alliance. The city of Oakland's attorney's office sent an email about the recycling center to you, Amir, and it says, Alliance Recycling in West Oakland has been a consistent nuisance to neighbors since it opened in the 80s. Neighbors say Alliance accepts stolen metal, encouraging theft of fences, construction materials, and other items in the area, and that the thieves use the money they get from Alliance to buy drugs in the park across the street. After many notices and warnings a few months ago, the city of Oakland issued citations for more than 40 violations for about $17,000 in fines. I am pleased to announce that during our negotiations, Alliance agreed to give up its conditional use permit and close its doors by August 20th, 2016. If the business remains open after that date, Alliance will owe the city $1,000 per day until it closes. The city attorney's office goes on to say, I believe this is a good outcome for neighbors in West Oakland whose quality of life has suffered as a result of this nuisance activity.
Mm-hmm. That's the point. You know, that's... I mean, this is West Oakland. This was the place where the first African-American labor union was formed. This is the place where the Black Panthers were. This is supposedly the hub of every kind of radicalism. And the city attorney refers in a blanket way to poor people as thieves who are addicts. And, it just saddens me that that's what we've come down to. I mean, it just saddens me that we as Americans don't have a smarter way to engage in conversations with each other about our most vulnerable members. And it's also so nuisance and blight. These are words that have been used in different ways at different points in the history of Oakland, in ways that have been actually quite racist even. Do you know? And classist, quality of life. Well, you know, I lived in Magnolia Row and I had quality of life. Yes, and the rattle of the shopping cart was a nuisance. And yes, having some trash on the ground was a nuisance. But really, when somebody is going through your trash and they don't have a bathroom and they don't have food and they have it, let's say they are addicts, is our response going to be to treat them like flies and just swat them? I mean, That's unconscionable in Oakland, of all places. And if this is going to happen in Oakland, you know, the poor are done for. Mm.
You know, every recycle center have accepted some merchandise that was illegally gotten. Simple as that. They may not know it, but they have got it, even from citizens that were so-called conformists to society, you know, who go out and make a living of recycling and picking up metals here and there, or even buying metals from people who have it, you know, and turning it in, and it kind of get mixed up in a pile of metal, and they just throw it in there. So there, it's not just that the recyclers are thieving and stealing it. It's going on. No matter what, you know, and you just can't stop everything. You can't sit there and find out if this piece of metal is stolen at this particular time. But they did enact something through the government that said that starting at a certain date, it's going to take 3 days before you receive your monies if you have recycled over a certain amount, I think over $100 or something like that. And that way they take pictures, they see who did it, and if it comes up stolen, they have access to that person.
I think when we come down to referring to each other as categories, you know, thieves, addicts, gentrifiers, this, that, and the other, we lose the ability to have a very important conversation. And the reason my partner Chiro and I made this film wasn't because we felt the neighbors were wrong or Alliance was right or whites are good or blacks are bad. It wasn't any of this kind of dualistic thing. It was, let's think this through much more deeply, much more humanely and gently. You know, we can't become this with us and against us kind of culture. Really, I mean, where does that lead? You know, compassion is part of it. And one of the things that I'm really grateful, which Chiro, my co-director and cinematographer, brought, was that element of compassion and tenderness and just walking the walk with each other. St. Mary Center in West Oakland, they do that. You know, they take in people with very difficult, shattered lives, older people, and do it. Let's do it much more broadly. I mean, the city of Oakland does it too. I mean, I spoke with Susan Shelton, who really was one of the she truly inspired me. And she kept on telling me, you know, one has to sift through things to get to the individual level, to get to the individual story. But just as we need to get down, we also need to move up. We need to look at this system-wide, because health is provided by one chunk of the city, jail is another chunk of the city. You know, the city is not talking to itself, and so it can't evaluate and make decisions properly. Even the city attorney, she primarily hears one particular point of view. Even the neighbors don't have a single point of view, and it's a bit our ability to deal with complexity, I feel, that on it hinges a lot of lives.
Amir Sultani is producer and co-director of Dogtown Redemption, a new documentary that provides an intimate glimpse into the lives of recyclers in West Oakland who search to survive. The film will be shown tonight at 5 o'clock at the Mill Valley Film Festival. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Landon Goodwin is one of the recyclers in Dogtown Redemption. Landon now lives in Vallejo, works in a recycling center, and as a pastor, he reaches out to and helps the homeless. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What do you think of the issue around recycling? These recycling centers, Alliance Metals, will be shutting down next August. If you live near a recycling center, if people go through your trash bins, and what are your overall thoughts about the issues Amir and Landon are talking about? How do we really tackle these issues? I think they're just getting worse in the Bay Area. I mean, I see it in my neighborhood. I see it all over San Francisco. Let's hear next from Bill in San Francisco. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This is Bill in San Francisco. I've been a resident of San Francisco since 79, so I've kind of seen the ups and downs of homelessness and gentrification. And I've actually thought about this quite a bit, the folks on the street doing recycling. And at least over time, I've kind of separated them into two. I mean, we're not supposed to talk about categories. Categories. I often see folks, pushing their carts in public areas, going through, public trash cans. And in my view, these guys are performing a service in that they are taking out recyclables that either someone else would have to recycle or probably may just end up in landfill. So when I see somebody, like down at a park or somebody who's doing that, not only do I feel good about that, I actually, if I have anything, I'll give it to them. And I go, here, take it. Great. And I actually feel that, those folks are really performing a service and perhaps should in some way be supported by the city, whether, giving them some kind of better mechanism for collecting things or whatever. But I think on the other side of it, and I think where maybe people get angry, is that in San Francisco, at least, we have a pretty sophisticated recycling program. And so, we put all our recycling in, we put it on the street. And occasionally, it doesn't happen very often to me if I live up a hill, folks will come by and they will go through my recycling, which I still don't mind, but I do mind is when they leave a huge mess. And I'm kind of going, whoa. So I think that maybe that's where some of the anger comes from. And I, at least in my mind, the folks who are doing this with the public trash are performing a service that should be recognized and supported. But then the folks who are going through and maybe just, I don't consider it stealing. What gets me more upset is that they leave a mess. So I'm interested in your take on that distinction. And B, the idea that to the extent that folks are actually going out and performing a service that makes it easier to recycle public trash, what can we do for them?
All right. Thank you for that question, Bill. I'm going to take a related question, and then we'll get responses from Amir and Landon. Let's go to Malcolm in East Oakland. Hi, Malcolm. Welcome to the show. Hi, Malcolm. All right. I think we lost Malcolm. Do you want to comment, Landon?
Hello?
Oh, Malcolm, are you with us?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Okay, great. I just I happen to live just paces away from East Oakland Recycling Center on San Leandro, and I just wanted to kind of provide a little brief point of view from my end. From living here, I have just come to the feeling that the people that are, collecting the trash and are probably homeless are minding their own business and really not any threat to me anyways, and I don't think to my neighbors even. There is an element, I think, of I mind my own business and they mind their own, and, we go about our ways respectfully. And, I do feel uncomfortable only in the sense that, I don't think that they're happy necessarily with their situation, and then, I don't really feel like reaching out to be like, providing anything either, because I've got my life and my needs. And so there's a little bit of an uncomfortableness, I suppose, to, you know, that dichotomy of being around somebody that's, you know, going through your trash and does feel like that can't be the right way things should be. But at the same time, I'm not threatened by them. And I think for by and large, I think they just want to, you know, get by and survive like everybody else. Mm.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Malcolm. And one more related call, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Leslie in West Oakland. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I'm just really glad you guys are doing this show. I do live in West Oakland, not very far from Alliance. And there are neighborhood groups such as the one that I'm a part of. And we try to have conversations that are pretty complex about the realities of some of the kinds of difficulties with recyclers and just other kinds of social dislocations. And I think Mr. Sultani is right, that our ability to deal with complexity is really low. And what I find is that it's a lot easier to have dichotomies and to mobilize people when you can actually kind of vilify people. And it feeds into conversations about what are the causes of poverty. Mm. And what I see is, even in terms of his point with social media and technology, we have something called the Nextdoor app, and on Nextdoor, all kinds of narratives get created, but at the exclusion of the participation of voices who are really being characterized. And so it really is a problem, and my experience of saying, hey, can we have more compassionate conversations? Can we not label one another? The minute I start to talk about the structural causes to poverty, and it's not about people's lack of moral character, or you can't simply say it's because people just, you know, can't stop stealing and why can't they be honest. The minute I bring up those kinds of conversations, the label comes out, well, you're just being PC. And so it makes it hard to establish conversations of compassion. So I'm really glad for this movie. I hope that it will be accessible in other kinds of venues, because we need help thinking about things in a more complex way. But people are really limited. And neighbors are really pushed. They are having a hard time living in West Oakland. Individuals really begin to think about self-interest and aren't able to think about other people's interests because even the rents are so high and they're being pushed out. So it is a very complex issue. And I feel for both my neighbors who complain about the recyclers. I complain about the recyclers when I'm being awakened at 2:00 in the morning and I've got work to do. But at the same time, I also understand the situation they're in is far more complex, and it's not simply about their moral character. It's about the structural realities and constraints of work and skill sets. And so it is really complex, and we need the help of government and citizens and movies like this to begin to open those conversations up and give people the skills to think more broadly. Mm. So I'm really grateful. Thank you for the movie.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Leslie. Landon, there's a lot there, but why don't you respond? So Bill was talking about how recyclers are really doing a public service. Sometimes they leave a mess. Malcolm says he doesn't really mind, but he's a little uncomfortable when he comes into contact with recyclers. And then Leslie has, you know, great comments about the root causes of this and the fact that we have to deal with poverty, and these are very complex issues.
Well, for one thing, there always are people who care and people who do not care. There are people who are disciplined and people who are undisciplined. And there's more disciplined people doing recycling than undisciplined people. And we only focus on the ones that are making the mess. I know that when I used to come down the street and come behind somebody and I see a mess, I would clean it up. Before, I would clean it up. And because I don't want to be accused of the one doing it, for one thing, and I just think it's the right thing to do. But we always have to point our finger at something for the systemic poverty that's going on here. So we point to the lowest on the totem pole. If the recyclers weren't there, the homeless weren't there, we have to go to the next lowest on the totem pole and say it's there. They are the problem. And as far as they being thieves and robbers, it really wasn't a problem until I think the government or the city decided that there's a lot of money that could be made here. So then they start outlawing it to go into bins, because a lot of people didn't care at first. But, you know, you just have to weed out. Whenever you're dealing with people, you just have to weed out the good from the bad, and that's what you have to do. So there are some people who are just really, who really care and have concern. You don't usually end up in that condition or that position because you were a disciplined person in the first place. So you're dealing with a lot of undisciplined type people. And some of them are learning how to be disciplined even now as they're doing this.
Well, what about those issues? Because Jason started using speed at 13. He grew up with an alcoholic father. He and his brother were sexually assaulted by a family acquaintance. And he went on and off heroin. I mean, really tragic, tragic story.
So,
And then just and one more example, I also wanted to give a voice to Miss K in your movie. People who were talking about Miss K says it's very rare to see a homeless Korean person, especially Korean woman, on the streets. She says that she has family in San Francisco, but they never answered her phone calls. In fact, Amir, you traveled with her. She knocked on the door and nobody answered the door. So all of these people have stories, and that's what often gets lost in these conversations.
I think so. I think homelessness is so complex, as is poverty. But I think if I were to generalize, you always hit trauma. Mm-hmm. Trauma is a part of it. And trauma in West Oakland is a part of people's lives, but it's also structural. In terms of the history of West Oakland. And until we address that deep layer of trauma, then we're not capable of trauma brings about separation, loneliness, isolation, all of these things. And then poverty, mental health, heroin, addiction, all of this stuff. As long as that trauma is there and we don't address it, we're in trouble. I mean, West Oakland as a chunk of Oakland, they drew the highway across it. That meant all the traffic that would go down San Pablo vanished. That brought about a lot of poverty. It's like, kind of like a Berlin Wall. The BART was drawn right through 7th Street, which was the heart of the African-American community in West Oakland. You know, so again, this is structural stuff that's been going on. Alliance, you had industrial zoning and residential zoning. And so people end up in these structures where we're not able to see properly the trauma. And then because we can't reestablish relationships, you have a collapse of trust in government, you have a collapse of trust in the neighbors, in people. That's a disaster that can be reversed. I mean, that's the beauty of film. You can look at the same thing from all the different perspectives, all of which have a lot of truth to them, in an attempt to reach at something higher.
You know, fear will prevent you from doing a lot of things. I heard them saying they get a little uncomfortable, and I don't blame them sometimes, you know, people being a little uncomfortable. But you have to brave up. Be brave. If people are going through your stuff, you go down there and you tell them, listen, I don't mind you going through that stuff. Just don't leave a mess. We're going to work together here. People used to even put recycle out for people because they knew they would come by, excuse me, and pick up to keep them from making a mess. But you got to go down there and you got to have a conversation and say, listen, you can say, I don't really care for you going through my trash. But if you do, keep it clean and keep it neat. Once you establish that type of relationship, then you become known to the person. And it's not such a fear of you going down there and embracing even the next one to come. Listen, to each come down, you have to take an effort, go the extra mile sometime. You can't just sit back and say, look at those people. They're just all messed up and just leave them like that. Go down and engage them. And once you engage them, then maybe you'll come away with a different opinion.
But some people have that thinking, right? I mean, I just got an email from Tabby who says, your show is propaganda when you gloss over the fact that these people are thieves. How do you reach people? How do you have a dialogue with someone who believes they're thieves? And I mean, a lot of people believe this and wants to say, we need to get rid of this problem.
You know why they believe they're thieves? They believe they're thieves because they're taking the recycled or in the bins that are going to a waste management, and they have outlawed it. At first, it wasn't no big thing. People didn't care. They didn't look at them as thieves. But once the governments are saying, you are a thief if you go through these things, then it became outlawed. They outlawed it to make them thieves. But it's like you had said earlier, somebody's going to recycle it, whether it goes to a company or goes to them. So it's not like the government is in such dire straits that they need to depend on recycling in order to make ends meet. But the people out there who are recycling, yeah, to make ends meet. Another thing that they don't know about, there are people who push shopping carts who have houses in the neighborhood. They just rather not drive their car because they can save gas, and they just rather take a shopping cart, they push it up to the thing, and you look at them, and you say, oh, look at them. They're thieves. No, they collected all that stuff from their home, from whatever they did for the week and then, or for the month or whatever their time period is, and they was turning it in. They were just pushing the shopping cart to get it there.
We also have some listeners who say we need to stop criminalizing poverty. Landon, we have just about a minute left, but you live in Vallejo. Are you still traveling to West Oakland to reach out to homeless people? And what does that say about the system that you have to travel to help people who don't have homes and who are struggling?
Well, I reach out to people that are in Vallejo as well. In my ministry, we have a feeding program every day, and we feed 100 to 200 people on a daily basis, well, except for the weekend. But those are people who I've become acquainted with and I love. So I kind of go back and show to the people that I once was doing the folly with and try to bring them out and encourage them to do just as I did. Just make up your mind that you want to do something different. So I go back to reach out to them, but I'll reach out to anyone who needs help.
Final thoughts, Amir?
So, I still kind of believe in the goodness of America. I see it in my neighbors. I see it in the recyclers, in the recycling center. And I think the challenge is to connect.
Amir Sultani is producer and director, co-director of Dogtown Redemption, a new documentary who gives a voice to recyclers in West Oakland. The film premieres tonight at 5 o'clock at the Mill Valley Film Festival, and Landon Goodwin is one of the recyclers in the film. He now lives in Vallejo, where he works in a recycling center, and as a pastor, he reaches out to the homeless. Amir and Landon, thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss the deadly twin bombings in Turkey and mounting anger against the Turkish government. How are the media covering this global story? On the domestic front, California Governor Jerry Brown has signed hundreds of bills, including three that curb the overprescribing of psychiatric drugs for foster kids. San Jose Mercury News' ongoing investigation, Drugging Our Kids, found one in four California foster teens receive psych medications. What grabbed your attention this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David Latulip is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.